Welcome to episode 31 of the Fredcast for the week of August the 28th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to another episode of the Fredcast. Thanks for your patience while we got this one out. It's going to be an abbreviated show, so sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes an abbreviated version of the Fredcast. Hey, welcome back, everybody. First, I want to apologize for bringing you a delayed and abbreviated Fredcast. As you know, I have a day job, and this week I've been traveling for business and have either been way swamped with work or totally exhausted at the end of each day. I've had the best intentions all week, and I have tried to get a Fredcast out to you, but it just hasn't been possible. So this week, I'm going to bring you just the briefest of news to keep you up to date on the world of cycling, and we'll return next week with a full version of the show, including all the news from the week. Now, following the news this week, you, the listeners, are going to take over the show as you give your comments on doping in cycling and Floyd Landis in particular. I think you'll find it very interesting. And don't forget that I'm also going to be announcing the winner of our contest this week to win a Vedio MC 1.0 Plus cycle computer. But first, I wanted to tell you about something I've noticed in my stats, which requires your attention. So listen up. In the past few weeks, I've released more than one show per week, and I've done this through a couple of bonus episodes. Now, in reviewing my download statistics, I've learned that many of you haven't heard each and every one of these shows. It seems that the software you're using to retrieve your podcast is only downloading the most recent shows each week. So, for instance, last week, I released episode number 30 and then immediately added a bonus podcast, and that's my new show, The Spokesman, and I added that into the Fredcast feed. According to my stats, all of you received The Spokesman, but only about half of you received episode number 30. The same thing happened a few weeks ago when I released a bonus episode after show number 28. Most of you got the bonus episode, but fewer than half of you received episode 28. Now, since I don't know what software you use, I can't give you any specific hints or tips about how to ensure that this doesn't happen. I can only encourage you to check the feed regularly to ensure that you've received and listened to every show. But for those of you using iTunes to get your podcast, be sure to visit iTunes Preferences. Once there, click on the podcast section, and where it says when new episodes are available, be sure you've selected download all instead of download the most recent one. This will ensure that you hear every episode of the Fredcast and all the other podcasts to which you're subscribed. Speaking of podcasts, if you listen to The Spokesman, I hope you enjoyed it. I got a lot of feedback from many of you, and you all really did enjoy the new format as well as the international slant to the show. So I'm really glad about that. This is going to be something we're going to try to do about every 2 weeks. But I am not planning on inserting the show into the Fredcast feed anymore. What you need to do is you need to go over to the website at www.the-spokesman.com. And click on the iTunes link or the RSS link in order to subscribe to the next shows. I'm hoping to be recording one this coming weekend, Labor Day, and if so, I hope that you will be subscribed to that so you can listen to it. And every week we're going to try to have different people on the show. A lot of times they'll be the same people that you heard from week to week, but we'll try to bring in some different people to try to mix it up a little bit and give a lot of different perspectives, some mountain bikers, some utility cyclists, maybe some recumbent riders, some roadies, just to try to give you as many different perspectives on the world of cycling as possible. Now, I also have another new podcast, and I think I told you about this one previously. This is one that I'm producing for the MS-150 Beta Bay Bike Tour, and it is the official MS-150 podcast. And you can hear that by going to www.ms150baytobay.com and clicking on the podcast link, and that'll give you a lot of information about what we're doing out here to try to fight multiple sclerosis and find the cure for the disease. So make sure that you've set your settings correctly in your podcatcher or in iTunes so that you get every Fredcast episode, and make sure that you're subscribed to all the additional podcasts that I've started doing. I appreciate your support. And now let's get on with the news, as abbreviated as it may be. Well, when we did the last Fredcast, for those of you who heard it, we were talking about the Eneco tour of Benelux and the fact that George Hincapie was in the lead, and it looked like he was going to win. Unfortunately, there was a freak accident that occurred at the finish line of the final stage of this year's Tour de Benelux. And as a result, George did not win the race. Instead, what happened was Stefan Schumacher from the Gerolsteiner team had a fan hit him as he was coming into the final finish. As a result, he swerved, he hit George, they hooked bars, George went down. Schumacher got some time bonuses as a result, and George ended up coming in second overall in the general classification. Now, the final stage was won by Philippe Gilbert of Belgium and the Française de Joux team. Schumacher was in third that day, and George was nowhere near the top 10. As a result, Schumacher won the final classification, and George Hincapie ended up 1 second behind as a result of Schumacher's time bonuses. Now, to his credit, Schumacher expressed regret at the way that he won the race. And George Hincapie did file a protest, but it was overruled, and Stefan Schumacher was declared the victor. According to Schumacher, "If I swerved, which I admit, it was only because I was hit by a spectator who appeared in front of me during the final sprint. I got a fright, I changed my direction, but I never had any intention of bothering George or making him fall. This should have been one of my greatest victories, the best moment of my career, but winning in this confusion ruins my pleasure. I don't know what else to say." So at least it seems like he has some regret about the fact that George had to go down, but it really does seem like it was an accident. We feel bad for George, but, you know, unfortunately, these things do happen, whether it's in cycling or in IndyCar racing or Formula One racing, any kind of racing, you can have an accident like this. As unfortunate as it is, fair is fair. George did go down, and Schumacher is the winner of this year's Eneco Tour of Benelux. The third of the annual Grand Tours has finally begun, the Vuelta a España, or Tour of Spain. This year's event began last Saturday with a team time trial through the streets of Malaga, and it was a short stage at just 7.3 kilometers. Now, the stage was won by Team CSC, and they were led by Carlos Sastre of Spain. Now, Sastre was the second place finisher in last year's Vuelta following Roberto Harris's doping problems. The second stage was a 106-mile trek from Malaga to Cordoba and was won by Quickstep's Paolo Bettini of Italy, with Tor Hushovd in second and Luco Paolini in third. Following the stage, Tor Hushovd led the general classification for the race's coveted gold jersey. Stage 3 took place on Monday and saw a relative newcomer to professional cycling, Francisco Ventoso of Saunier Duval, who outsprinted the most famous names in sprinting to a stage victory after 219 kilometers on the road, and that's the longest stage of this year's Vuelta. Second place in the stage went to Crédit Agricole's Tor Hushovd, allowing him to keep the gold jersey, with Australian Stuart O'Grady in third. Now, with the stage win, Ventoso moved up to third in the general classification, with O'Grady in second just behind Hushovd. Tuesday's stage 4 was a 135-kilometer route, the shortest stage of the event, so we had the shortest following the longest stage this year. The win went to Germany's Eric Zabel of Milram, with Hushovd in second and Jean-Patrick Nazon of AG2R in third. Despite Zabel's sixth career stage win in the Vuelta, he only moved up to second in the overall general classification, and Hushovd retained the gold jersey. But things really changed today when the riders hit the mountains on stage 5, a 178-kilometer route from Plasencia to the top of the ski station at Bejar. The day's racing included 2 first category climbs, along with a category 2 and a category 3 hill, as well as a finish on what the Spanish call a special category climb at the ski resort of La Covatilla. The Vuelta's website says that the final 1,960-meter climb will be, quote, where the first discards of the bunch are expected to happen. And that is precisely what happened. They were actually discarded. Former leader Tor Hushovd came in 143rd place in the stage and dropped to 109th overall. The stage was won by Italy's Danilo De Luca of the Liquigas team, who outsprinted Janic Brockovic at the summit, with Andrei Kazechkin of Astana coming in third. Their placings in the stage now match the general classification too, with Carlos Sastry, the race's first leader of the year, now in fourth place. Now, I'll keep you posted on the next episode of the Fredcast as the race continues its march through Spain, but there is a link in the show notes to the Vuelta's website at lavuelta.com. Well, how can I discuss professional cycling without also discussing doping? They seem to go hand in hand these days. So I've got a couple of stories for you. I'll be brief about each of them. Last week, I told you, for those of you who heard the show last week, I told you that we were expecting the Spanish authorities to release more names in the Operación Puerto scandal. Those names were not released, but now the UCI is saying in a statement on their website, and there is a link in the show notes, that they're expecting more information to be released soon, specifically about the top riders who were excluded from the Tour de France. And apparently this information that's coming out could lead to some sanctions being dealt by the UCI. So go ahead and take a look at the UCI's website to see the exact statement. But of course, I'll keep you updated here and let you know what information it is that's released when it is released. Now, in the meantime, Ivan Basso is actually being grilled by Italian authorities on the doping inquiry. He has so far, according to Gazzetta dello Sport's website, he's so far responded to all of the questions, but there obviously is an investigation going on in Italy, and it will be up to the Italian Cycling Federation to impose any sanctions if Basso is found guilty of any doping. And then, of course, the UCI will act if they decide that sanctions are too lenient. So we'll see what happens in that one. And of course, I'll keep you posted. And finally, in doping news, and again, I'm trying to keep it brief for two reasons. One, just because of the week that it's been. And two, because like you, I'm tired of all this doping news. Wanted to let you know that T-Mobile's racing license has actually been renewed by the UCI. They've been given a 4-year racing license. Now, of course, the team's going to be reshaping itself now that they've lost some of their top riders, including Jan Ulrich. But it's obvious that the UCI has confidence in them in giving them this new 4-year license. So it remains to be seen what the team's going to look like in the next season to come. So we'll see how that works. But it's good to know that T-Mobile does have the UCI's confidence and that they've now been given the 4-year license from the UCI to race in the Pro Tour. And in a bit of sad news from professional cycling, there's news from Antwerp, Belgium, that Belgian cyclist Christophe Brandt is in stable condition a day after a dramatic crash in the Sels to Merksem Cup race. Now, Brandt is a Davidemon rider and a frequent domestique for riders such as Robbie McEwen. He's in a coma after he suffered major injuries in a crash. According to the reports that I've read, he crashed in the peloton while they were racing at about 50 kilometers per hour. He hit a traffic light post and then hit a car. When he went down, he had a fractured arm, 4 shattered ribs, a broken leg. They had to remove one of his kidneys, and they were worried at first that they're going to have to remove his spleen, but it turned out that they were able to save it. And as a result, doctors have put him into a drug-induced coma, and he's going to be in that coma for a couple of days while his body begins the healing process. Doctors have said that there is no threat of nerve damage, but that they are looking for a long recovery for Brandt. But they are saying that they are expecting that he will be recovered and that hopefully he will be back to racing soon. So we wish him all the best for a very speedy and a full recovery. You know, every week or so on the Fredcast, I bring you a story of people who are doing a ride, a long distance ride, usually to honor one group or another or to bring awareness to one cause or another. On August 19th, I saw an article that appeared in the News Sentinel from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I was planning on presenting the information in that article to you. Let me just read from the first few paragraphs of the article, and hopefully they won't mind my doing so. But again, this is copyright of the News Sentinel. And it says, "Police cyclists deliver a message." The article says this. The letter begins, "Dear Daddy, I miss you so much." It's scrawled in a child's hand and continues with, "I've cried a couple times thinking about you." And it ends with a signature, "Love, Jeannie." Lieutenant Gary Dudley of the Indiana State Police had the letter laminated so he could attach it to the back of his cycling jersey. It will stay there until he rides his bike into a Brooksville cemetery and tapes it to the headstone belonging to Indiana State Police Lieutenant Richard T. Gaston, Jeannie's father. Dudley was one of about 20 cyclists from police agencies across the state that stopped Friday at Headwaters Park in a 13-day, 1,100-mile trek to honor officers killed in the line of duty. They started their journey Wednesday in Indianapolis and will end there August 29th. Now, this is where the article continues and talks about the ride that they were doing. Let me read you from the Indiana Concerns of Police Survivors website, the group for whom the officers were riding, from their release of August the 22nd. Now, remember, that letter was taped to the back of the jersey of a gentleman by the name of Gary Dudley. Let me read this news release. August 22nd, 2006. While riding in a bicycle ride to honor the fallen heroes of Indiana, Indiana State Trooper Gary Dudley and Lake County Sheriff's Department Chief Gary Martin answered their final call. Into the seventh day of their annual ride, their support vehicle was struck from behind on State Route 63 just north of Perrysville, Indiana, and the collision shoved the support vehicle into the riders, killing Gary and Gary, and injuring retired Indianapolis Police Department officer Spencer Moore and the driver of the support vehicle, Rocky Bumpus. Please keep everyone in your thoughts and prayers as they deal with this tragic loss. So here were some people who were doing a very nice deed, participating in a ride to honor police officers and to support the families of those killed in the line of duty. And as a result, they were killed. Now, apparently, there are going to be several weeks of investigation before officials decide whether or not to file any charges against the driver of the car that struck the support vehicle. But, you know, it just goes to show something that we've talked about here before. Cycling can be very dangerous. Riding on roads can be dangerous, even when you've got a support vehicle behind you with a large banner reading, "Caution, cyclists ahead." You always have to be careful. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers are with the families of those killed and those injured. And if you want more information about this or ways that you can make memorial contributions, please visit the show notes where I've put a link to the Indiana Concerns of Police Survivors website. I'm sure they'd appreciate your support, as well as any donations that you might want to make in support of the families of these officers who were tragically killed in what was really just a great ride and a great gesture in which they were taking part. And just a couple of quick stories for you about the ways that bicycles can do good and bad things in the world. First of all, a story from Namibia. Apparently, there are limited financial resources in the country, and one of the issues there is that they don't have enough money for a fleet of ambulances. As a result, in October, there is going to be a new factory launched that will manufacture bicycle ambulances. Now, basically, a bicycle ambulance looks a lot like a regular bike, but they are really stretchers on wheels, and these stretchers attach to a normal bike, and they're allowed to tow a sick person or perhaps somebody who's pregnant who needs to get to the hospital. And this is just one way that they're going to be able to find ways to transport people to the hospital in a country where they just don't have the resources for a fleet of ambulances. So that's a great way that they're going to be using bicycles to help others. And finally, sort of an interesting story for you. This came from Oslo, Norway. Now, a suspicious item was spotted in a car parked near the Israeli embassy. Now, of course, all over the world, with all the things that are going on, security fears are heightened, and everybody is on a very heightened state of alert. Well, here's this suspicious item spotted in a car near the Israeli embassy in Oslo last Tuesday, and bomb disposal experts and dogs were dispatched to the scene, and police, of course, cordoned off the roads. People who lived or worked in the area were advised to stay indoors and avoid standing near windows. After closer inspection, the suspicious item was determined to be a bicycle pump. And everybody got to go back to work and go back to their houses, and everything was back to normal. But it reminded me of a story we talked about a few months ago now with the guy at the university who had the sticker from the punk rock band on his bike, and everybody thought that his bike was a pipe bomb. I think perhaps this bicycle pump needed a sticker on it that said, "This bicycle pump is not a pipe bomb." And that's it for the news tonight in what I guess was not so much of an abbreviated broadcast after all. Well, I finally finished editing together your audio comments on the Floyd Landis situation. I want you to know that I received a large number of comments, and I wish I could have used all of them. Unfortunately, for a couple of reasons, I couldn't. First reason, the show would have gone on forever, and I don't think any of you would have liked that. But the second reason is, unfortunately, some of the audio quality just wasn't up to snuff. So if you don't hear your comment, I apologize for that. I tried to use as many and as much as I could. And even though I had to discard some for audio quality, I did keep others in here, and I want you to know that some of the audio quality still is not that great. I tried my best to clean it up, to try to boost the audio in cases where it needed to be boosted, to try to take noise out in cases where the noise needed to be removed. But I just want you to know in advance, if you're listening on your portable player, I need to warn you that this may be difficult to hear at times. I really did try to clean it up, but let's face it, I was a political science major, not an audio engineering major. So give me a break if you don't like the way this sounds. I really did do my best. Anyway, I want to thank all of you who sent in audio comments and emails. I appreciated every single one, and I hope you enjoy this special episode of the Fredcast. Now, I would have made this a separate episode, as I promised, but when I saw what was going on with the stats, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I wanted to make sure that you were able to hear all these comments as well as the normal Fredcast news, so I put it all together into this one show. Oh, by the way, you remember that we had a contest associated with this show. The people at Video Cycle Computers and Ibex Sports generously donated one Video Model MC 1.0 Plus Altitude cycle computer to one lucky Fredcast listener chosen randomly from among the entrants. And we've chosen our winner. The winner is... You know what? I think I'll announce it at the end of the show. So enjoy the comments of your fellow Fredcast listeners and stay tuned to see if you're the winner of the Video Cycle Computer.
Hi, my name is Andy, and I'm a Fred. Oops, sorry, that's David's line. Okay. Well, first I'd like to thank David for this audio forum, and I'd like to thank David for his efforts to serve the cycling community. I think he does everyone a fantastic service, and we've got to congratulate him on how successfully he's accomplished that. Now, on to my comments about Landis. The main point I'd like to get across is that the only thing that's protecting Floyd and every other athlete who's cheated and lied are the fans clinging to the illusion that their heroes are telling the truth despite overwhelming odds and facts against them. And that the authorities are somehow lying, and their favorite athletes are not. That's the only thing that's standing in the way of progress in terms of cleaning up the sport. The facts are, Floyd tested positive for testosterone. Floyd tested very positive for testosterone, 11 to 1. Floyd used synthetic testosterone. We know now that Floyd lied several times so far by his own admission. He looked sincere every single time, and he looked like the likable person we'd like him to be, and he probably is. But of course, we now know the truth about drinking, cortisone shots, thyroid hormone, dehydration. We know that truth now, and he said it. They were not good excuses. For those of you who are thinking of letting Floyd off the hook, think again. We have the chance to finally clean up our sport, so let's take it. And here's a message to Floyd. Floyd, you really do have a chance to be a hero. People love you, even now. I can feel it, I can hear it. People don't want to think that you're not a nice person. And to be honest, I don't think that you're a bad person. I actually think you're quite likable. If you want to be a real hero, fess up and tell us about everything. That's my audio comment. I'm Andy Francione from Montreal, Canada. Thank you.
I hope that he's innocent. I tend to believe he's innocent, but I don't know. We'll just have to see how this all plays out. I think any guy who can show up, come from a midnight farm and show up on his beater bike and a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt and beat the pants off of the hardcore racer kids at the time who have, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 machines, I don't think Floyd needs to take anything. If he could have done that without any sort of official training or real bike or anything like that. He's been pretty outspoken in the past about it. And boy, I really want to believe him, but again, I guess we'll see how that comes out.
Yeah, I wanted to believe that Floyd was the winner, but with each excuse I became more and more convinced that he was just making it up. Each excuse seemed to get lamer and a little more out there. It was the beer, it was the whiskey, it was this, it was that, it was that. But when he decided that, no, he was just naturally high in testosterone, that's when I became convinced that he wasn't shooting straight.
With regard to Floyd Landis, I would love to believe that he's innocent and still hold out some hope that some miracle can come forward and prove it. But as it stands right now, I can't get over the results of the tests and believe that as things stand, it's a very sad day for cycling. We had the Operation Puerta scandal at the start of the tour. We have this after it. It's an absolute terrible year this year. I look forward to some effort by both the Pro Tour teams and the UCI to come forward and actually try and clean up our sport.
Hi David, this is Paolo, calling from Italy. I partially agree with you about the Floyd Landis affair. In my opinion, you tend to simplify the problem. Your question is Floyd Landis guilty or not? I think that you disregard the central role of the cycling teams. What I'm trying to say is that the teams probably know that their riders use doping. It seems strange to me, for example, that in the last few years the Phonak team hasn't realized that a large number of their riders were dopers. You know their names: Tyler Hamilton, Santiago Perez, Oscar Camenzin, Floyd Landis, Gutierrez Catalunya, Santiago Botero. I think that the management and the medical staff of the team haven't kept watch on the riders. But when a doping scandal comes out, the teams apply the so-called ethical code. They fire the rider and nothing happens to the teams. I think that this is wrong, and this makes the riders the real victims of doping. The Pro Tour teams and La Société du Tour de France have transformed our sport in a show and in a business. The power is in their hands, and you know, the show must go on. The riders are hostages of this mechanism. The UCI is absent. We can't tolerate this situation. A well-known Italian cycling magazine, BT Sport, put forward a proposal. At the moment, a rider who doesn't pass a doping test must stop its activity for 2 years. BT Sport suggests that when a rider doesn't pass a doping test for the first time, he could continue his activity if he revealed the names of those who helped him to take doping. For example, Floyd Landis. The UCI says, Floyd, this is the first time you appear to be involved in a doping problem. We allow you to continue riding, but you must tell us the names of those who knew in your team that you used these substances, tell us the names of the doctors and the managers that had you. I think that this is the only way to help the riders to come out from this situation in which they can't say the truth, because this is not an advantage for them. Some riders in the past couldn't bear the pain of this situation. One of them was the greatest of all, Marco Pantani.
Hello, David. This is Jeremy Vaught from Triathlon Radio at triathlonradio.com and the BeginnerTriathlete.com podcast at www.podcast.beginnertriathlete.com. I just wanted to pass along some of my thoughts on this whole Floyd Landis thing. Personally, I have a really hard time thinking that he is guilty. And I base that on the fact that I think he's a man of integrity, based not necessarily on his words, but the words of his coach and the many others around him. He also knew they were going to test, and he wouldn't risk. Also, he's not an idiot, and testosterone's not going to help you for a single day's effort. In addition to all that, he's also shown that he can train at that intensity, at that distance that he raced on stage 17. So it's not like he's never done it before. He's done it many times before. And finally, you know, I hate to say it, but I think that there's a lot of Europeans that despise seeing Americans beating them at their own sport on their own soil. And Landis was just one American too many.
And I'm one of the people who was hoping beyond all hope that he was innocent on this. But seeing as how all the samples have come back positive, the punishment should fit the crime. He should be stripped. I agree with that. He should be banned, and Oscar Pereiro should get the yellow jersey. I still hope that there's something, you know, that something could, you know, that in the appeals process, something could come out to prove his innocence. Unlikely as that may seem, you know, you got to hold out hope. But stands right now, he's a doper. He should be punished for it.
Hello, Fredcast listeners. This is Erik Leijs from the Dutch cycling podcast Wielerjournaal. This weekend there was a race in my neighborhood, a race with a lot of professionals from different cycling teams, and one of them was Koos Moerenhout from Phonak. That's right. And most people won't know him, especially in the United States, because he's not so famous, but he was the last man of the Phonak team that was with Landis in the now famous stage 17 of the Tour de France. He won the race here in my neighborhood, and after that I had a little chat with him. He told me that, of course, he was quite down from everything that has happened. You must understand, he just signed a contract of 2 years, for 2 years, with the Phonak team. And he had an quite large amount of money earned with the Tour de France. That is before the doping story started. And now he ends up empty-handed, no contract and no money earned in the Tour de France. And we're talking about a lot of money. Now, a reporter here in Holland asked him what he was planning to do if Landis proved guilty, if he was going to sue him. And he said no, just because Landis is a good friend of him. Sure, he is against doping, but he can't believe that Landis did it. And that is exactly the same feeling I had after the tour, and even now still. After all the stories about Landis, I've read books about him, I can't believe he did it. You know, that guy is not stupid. You must understand, because a lot of people say, hey, he doped, sure he can win the tour. But it's not that simple. He has trained for years, all for the Tour de France, eventually. And then he would simply dope because he had an off day? That is not Landis. I can't believe that. If Landis is guilty, he must pay. It's that simple. But just suppose that after 5 years, they discover that something went wrong in the lab. I mean, it's France, come on. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Anyway, I think that the media has done a poor job with this doping story. I mean, Landis never had a chance. He was already guilty when the first press releases hit the public. So I think the media has a large responsibility in this, because they destroy a career in just a few articles. But to repair it, well, that's a little bit harder. We in Holland have a guy, Gert-Jan Teunissen, who won the Tour de France stage Alpe d'Huez. After it, he was found guilty of testosterone. Well, his career was over after that, but 5 years later they discovered that his body has produced testosterone. And 5 years later, for him, there was a little article in the back of the newspaper, and nobody cared anymore. But his career was destroyed. So the media should be very careful with these stories. And they did a poor job on Landis. And finally, I think that the teams should take their responsibility. And if they do not, then the UCI should make them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that winners of the earlier stages of La Tour de France go through the A test? So at stage 11, his A test would have been negative, otherwise we would have heard about it by now, right? It just doesn't make sense for Floyd to have deliberately increased his testosterone ratio only for the end of the race, when it would not have had enough time to benefit his performance. Floyd is either very stupid, hard for me to believe, or there was some sort of conspiracy.
I think that it's a sport that has some history of corruption. The lead into this year's tour demonstrated the wide-ranging impact of doping. I saw the same interview with Leno. I thought that Floyd was pulling a howdy-doody act, wholesome Opie from Mayberry kind of thing. Blaming others, not accepting responsibility. I think after the B sample came through with the same or virtually the same results as the A sample, he should be stripped of the title and banned from cycling for whatever the governing body says, probably a year or two.
Needless to say, I think Floyd's career will be over unless he finds some way to vindicate himself from this mess. In addition, you know, I feel if indeed he did use testosterone illegally, then you know, I feel sorry for Oscar Pereiro, who should have been allowed the pleasure of riding to Paris with the yellow jersey on and taking the victory in you know, normal fashion. You know, so I guess really I don't have any brilliant words of wisdom other than to say I think the whole thing stinks. You know, and next year when the tour comes around, I just don't know that I'll be able to ride the emotional roller coaster that I did this year because the ending this year was just too painful.
I had hoped Floyd Landis would win. He was battling through a lot of pain. And going for the underdog, I'd hoped he'd do well. Not wishing to be a fly in the ointment, but technical advantages. Here's a question for you. Your road bike probably costs a few thousand dollars. It is made out of extremely high-tech materials, fully aerodynamic, and all that sort of thing. Now, if you were to put your road bike up against my general everyday bike, your bike would have a massive advantage. And that's purely because you've spent the money on it. Now, the UCI specifies sizes, shape, weights of bikes to be used. But the manufacturers spend millions, I'd have thought millions, perfecting the designs to push the envelope of the design limitations. Why can't people do that? Why can't people push themselves technically, using the full advantage of the systems available to them, to push themselves to the limit? As long as they're within the limits, of course. I compete in amateur events, but I know of people who take creatine. It's perfectly legal. I don't know how legal it is in professional athletics world, when I go out for rides, I take energy drinks, electrolyte drinks. That gives me an advantage over other people. Should they be banned? Floyd Landis had his handlebars changed because of the hand position on the bike. The bicycle company were happy to let him out onto the track with a illegal set of handlebars. No one vilified him for that. Where'd you draw the line?
In all honesty, I can't say I believe Floyd Landis when he says he doesn't dope. Nor do I believe Tyler Hamilton or Jan Ullrich or Lance Armstrong. I think they all dope. Why? Because that's the only way they can play the game. A few guys started cheating a few decades ago, and now everyone must take some kind of enhancement just to level the playing field. I assume if you're listening to the podcast, you love cycling. So I want you to imagine something. Imagine you were blessed from birth with a special gift for riding a bike. A lean body, the perfect proportion of slow and fast twitch muscle fiber, the lungs of an elephant, the heart of a champion. Now imagine you spent your childhood getting up at 5 a.m. to do intervals and drills before school. That you worked your way through the categories as an amateur with the dream of someday turning pro. That you skipped college to pursue that dream. And when that magic day came, when you were finally handed that professional contract you'd sacrificed so much for, the team manager took you aside and explained to you the facts of life. That companies only sponsor teams that win races. That you're expected to take whatever performance-enhancing pills or shots or creams they give you for the good of the team. Of course, you can refuse and go back to Cat 1 racing, but you'll never get to compete in Europe, to live your dream and perhaps win some races, make some serious money, or at least meet some podium girls. So here's the question. Do you turn down that pro contract in the life of a professional racer? Well, if your answer is yes, you might be a better man than I am.
So there you have it, a lot of varied opinions from your fellow Fredcast listeners. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope that it showed you what it showed me, and that is that the opinions on this situation with Floyd Landis and with doping in general are extremely varied among our listeners, and I, for one, appreciate all of the different opinions that were expressed, and I definitely appreciate those of you who sent in comments. So now the waiting is over. The winner of the VDO MC 1.0 Plus Altitude Cycle Computer, brought to you by VDO Cycle Computers and Ibex Sports, the winner is listener Andy from Montreal, Canada, who actually was the first commenter that you heard in that segment there. So congratulations, Andy. Your MCO 1.0 Plus cycle computer will be on its way to you shortly. And for the rest of you, thank you so much for entering. Thank you for sending in the audio comments. Ibex Sports has said that they'd like to make it a regular occurrence where they give away cycle computers. So we should have another contest here shortly. We hope that all of you who entered in this contest will enter in the next one. And for those of you who didn't, you have another chance to win a VDO cycle computer. So thanks to VDO as well as to Ibex Sports for making that happen for listener Andy and for future listeners coming up in the next weeks and months. And that's going to do it for the Fredcast this evening. Thanks again to everybody who sent in the audio comments. And if you'd like to send in audio comments on anything that we've talked about, several ways that you can do that. You can send it in an email along with a text comment to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can use the audio link on the website at www.thefredcast.com, or you can call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. Now, the month is coming to a close very, very quickly, so if you haven't voted yet on Podcast Alley, I sure would appreciate it if you did that. There's a link in the show notes, as well as a form on the webpage at thefredcast.com, where you can vote for us on Podcast Alley. But no matter if you've voted or not, please continue to help spread the word. Tell your friends about the Fredcast. Really would appreciate it. Before we go tonight, make sure that you do check your podcatcher or iTunes to make sure it is configured so that you get every show of the Fredcast, and make sure you check back to make sure that you haven't missed any. And of course, Don't forget to go to the website at www.the-spokesman.com to subscribe, because it looks like we should be recording another Spokesman podcast any day now. As we leave this evening, as we do every Fredcast, we have PodSafe cycling music. Music comes to us from music.podshow.com, and that's the PodSafe Music Network. Tonight's music is a song called Haven by a band named Fisher. Links are in the show notes to the song as well as to the artist's website. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for being patient while I had to do my day job. Until next time, I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
doors always open.